Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. Coming up on the program, Anna Meepal, who you just saw, the Green Party leader. She just used these words, craven, sexist, and cynical. The Green Party leader is hitting back. Check this out.
To the Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, I say to you today, you are no ally and you are no feminist. Territories of the
Mississauga. Anna Meepal refuses to back down. She claims Justin Trudeau is targeting her and targeting her MP because she's a woman. She is going to join us. Is she going to stare down her own party? What will she do? This is an extraordinary moment. She literally just cut off her press conference. She's going to join us. We'll try to get some more details for you. Then, Cold War continued.
It was important to meet in person so there can be no mistake about or misrepresentations about what I wanted to communicate. I did what I came to do.
U.S. President Joe Biden sits down with Russian President Vladimir Putin for a face-to-face that was cut hours short. What happened? Is there any change on the fraught U.S.-Russia relationship? We'll break down the diplomatic progress with CTV's Washington correspondent Richard Madden. He's standing by. And a COVID emergency in Keshechewan. Was the government help too late?
This will be a difficult week for Keshechewan, but there is a real surge of capacity and resources getting in.
Indigenous Services Minister Mark Miller says boots are on the ground to help Keshechewan, but how did the situation get so dire? Plus, why is the government still in court fighting compensation for Indigenous children? Indigenous Services Minister Mark Miller will join us. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players. All right, just seconds ago, the Green Party leader, Anna Meepal, was at a podium firing back at those within her own party who are trying to oust her and also firing at the Liberal Party and specifically Justin Trudeau for, she says, poaching one of her MPs. She dismissed her opponents as craven, sexist, cynical. She called out the Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, for targeting strong women and trying to run them out of politics. She said she's going to stay on as the leader of the Green Party. But she did not say that she was going to give in to some ultimatum that the Executive Council demanded last night. Let me give you the background on how it got to this moment, because it's been a long crisis. Last night, the Green Party leader, Anna Meepal, testified for a grand total of 3 minutes, but she narrowly avoided a leadership review. But the Green Party's federal council gave her an ultimatum. Denounce her former senior advisor for his comments about some Green MPs, or face a vote of no confidence. Paul's former advisor had called some of the Green MPs, there's only three of them, anti-Semitic and discriminatory after they tweeted out about the Israel-Palestinian crisis, one referring to Israel as an apartheid state. That controversy led to the third Green MP, Jenica Atwin, to cross the floor and join the Liberals. She was on this show and on Question Period, and she said she blames Anna Meepal for the departure. Now, what will Anna Meepal do? Will she bend to the will of the Executive Council, the Federal Council? And which case, the question is, will people question the strength of her leadership? Or will she try to reassert control over her own party? Let's find out, because we've just been joined by Green Party leader Anna Meepal, and I appreciate you joining us. And I know you just left that press conference, so thank you for being here. Let me start at this press conference where you were blasting your critics as craven, cynical, and sexist. Who exactly are you calling craven, sexist, and cynical?
Well, those were separate comments related to different people. And I said that the Liberal Party, in their stated objective to sow division in our party and to create chaos, their stated policy, that they were being very cynical about politics and the people who participate in politics. They were being very craven in that, because that is very much a winner-takes-all, win-at-all-cost kind of strategy. And what I said is that, unfortunately, some of the events that happened within a very small group of our federal councillors were absolutely, unfortunately, sexist. I want to stress that those were the minority of our councillors.
Let me get to some of these comments, but you avoided basically a leadership review last night narrowly, as we understand. And we understand that federal counsel wants you to denounce your former senior advisor for his words about some of the MPs. We just listened to your press conference. You did not say that you reject him or renounce him. They said if you don't do it, you will face a confidence vote. Why did you not denounce him?
Well, first, as I said, this decision is less than 24 hours old. And more importantly, as I said in the press conference, that I'm looking to have the same scope to do my work without it being directed in a way that it has never been directed before for any other leader of our party. I am not looking, and I don't think that it's appropriate for there to be any sorts of ultimatums. I haven't decided yet whether this is one of them. And given that Mr. Zaltzman is no longer with my office, I don't see the need to do that. What I do have the need to do, and I have
but
said
sorry,
many times,
were his comments appropriate? Yeah. Let's just get there. I'm just trying to figure this out. You know what he said. He called some of the MPs anti-Semitic, discriminatory. Jenica Atwin, who's left your party, told me that she did not feel supported by you. Do you reject his comments?
First, I reject Jenica Atwin's premise, as I've said. We have never had a conversation on Israel. We only had one conversation about this. And so I have said that I reject the premise that her decision, given that it began weeks before any of this conflict did, are founded in this. I think that that is something that suits this moment, given the unfortunate blowback that she's receiving about her decision. I am accountable for my words. Mr. Zaltzman is no longer with my office, and I am not a person, whether it's him or anyone else, that after that has been done and resolved is going to enter into that. I will say for myself that I do not believe, while I disagree with many of the opinions of our MPs on this particular foreign policy, I support them. I do not believe that they are anti-Semitic, and I would not work with anyone that I consider to be anti-Semitic.
Okay, but again, I got to ask you, because someone left whatever you think. Ms. Atwin told us that this is a big reason why she just bolted your party. That's a third of your caucus.
Evan, I would just say...
The federal counsel
but
has
Evan,
said...
Evan, I would say she...
What are your thoughts on your senior advisor's words calling out MPs as anti-Semites and discriminatory? Will you not condemn his words or just let them stand?
As I said in my press conference, it is very important to me to speak to others before having this conversation. This decision is less than 24 hours old. I have said very clearly what my view is. I have said very clearly what my support for MPs. And Evan, again, I find it very troubling that that Ms. Atwin's words subsequent to her press conference when she announced she was leading has become the account of the record. She said very clearly on the day that she left that I was not responsible for the decision. I wasn't even a factor in the decision, and that this was personal to her, and she hoped that we would remain friends in the future. That is verbatim what she said. She absolutely did an about face the next day. So I think the question to ask is, what happened between Thursday and Friday?
Well, I know that she said it was a factor, and then she said it was a big factor to me. So, but let me just get at, you were asked
on
about
Friday.
This in a press conference, the media has been leaked what are federal counsel allegations against you. I can read them. You have acted with an autocratic attitude of hostility, superiority, and rejection. You failed to assume your duty to be an active, contributing, respectful, attendant member of the federal counsel. You failed to develop a collaborative working relationship. You failed to engage in respectful discussions. You failed to use dialogue and compromise. You've attended few council meetings. You've displayed anger, long, repetitious, aggressive monologues. You've failed to recognize any of the ideas except your own. You've acted in a manner not in compliance with the leader's role. This is a lot here. You have a personal reputation for dishonesty, which gives opposition parties the ability to compromise her election. What do you make of these allegations against you?
Well, I said today what I made out of those allegations. They're racist and sexist, and of course it's, and again, I'm not aware of this document being sent out there. I do not talk about the contents of confidential documents. All I can say is that what you're describing makes me sound like an angry black woman, and that's a trope that we've heard a lot of times before. This document, Evan, I'm so grateful to the majority of councillors who rejected it, who disavowed themselves from it. And so all I can say is that there's a small group of councillors who are on their way out, who have some misguided opinions. And it really reinforces to me, Evan, why this work is so important and why we, within our institutions, need to make sure that we're dismantling systemic racism whenever we can.
Okay, I just want to make sure I'm understanding this, Ms. Paul. You're saying there's a small group that's on their way out in the party because people are going to ask you, if you're the leader of the party, are you going to push back against the federal council who you believe are, some of them are trying to run you out? Are you going to push back on them? And are you trying to, you said that they're on their way out. Who's on their way out?
When I say that, Evan, there's natural turnover in our party. We are hosting council elections. They happen every year. The bulk of our councillors in this particular year, for different reasons, those positions are up for re-election. And so we will have a renewed and a renewed council very soon. I'm very excited to do that. In the meantime, I hope that that the councillors, for as long as they're there, will choose to work collaboratively with me. And as I said, the majority are very committed to the same agenda of diversity as I am, and we're doing great work together.
Just a couple things. The Quebec wing of the party wants you to resign. They told us last night. The Atlantic representatives on the federal council want you to resign. What's your response to them?
My response is that the council had a robust discussion about that last night, as I didn't have much time to speak, but I had an opportunity to. My response is that I have a very recent and robust mandate from our membership, and we are all accountable, first and foremost, to our members. And my response is what I said in the press conference, which is that there are people who will take advantage of this moment in order to question the leadership of someone like me because of the higher standard that we are always held to in these situations. And I've been quite calm about these things. You know, I always seek to work collaboratively, but there is a moment for pushback. And as I said, many eyes are on me. Many eyes are waiting to see whether someone like me can succeed in a role like this where no one has before.
Okay, so you believe that race and religion are a motive here?
I believe that, without getting into the specifics of the allegations, I believe, and as I said, many councillors and our MPs believed that the document that they were presented with, in their own words, was inflammatory and offensive. Offensive, and a breach of our code of ethics. So I want people to remember this is a small group. When people had the choice, they disavowed it. I thank them for that. And it really tells me that we're heading on the right track as a Green Party.
Is Elizabeth May undermining your leadership? She did not come out and directly support you.
Well, I can't speak for Elizabeth. All I can say is that Elizabeth was one of the main reasons that I joined the Green Party of Canada. One of the main reasons that I decided to run so I might have the opportunity to work closely with her. She is the reason that many of us are here in the party. We all owe her a great debt. She's a great parliamentarian. She's one of the, she's one for the books, absolutely, an iconic parliamentarian.
Finally, just one last question about your remarks about Justin Trudeau. You said he's targeting strong women. You said it's craven what the Liberals are doing. But why is that? You know, MPs walk across the floor all the time. This is an age-old tradition in Parliament. You have cast it in the light of religion and race and craven politics, and yet this has happened countless times throughout history. Why do you think race, gender and religion play a role in the fact that one of the MPs left, a female MP left, to join his party and blamed you for it? So why is it Justin Trudeau's fault?
Evan, you know, I think you're great, but you have conflated a lot of things there that were said about different people at different times. What I said, and I will say it here again, is that Justin Trudeau is no ally and Justin Trudeau is no feminist. He knew what he did and he was involved with this from the beginning, was going to undermine my leadership. It was one of the purposes. And I encourage people to read the articles that set out the entire plan. And so if you're seeking to support women in politics, if you were seeking to at least leave space for someone like me in politics in a role like this, a historic role, then you certainly wouldn't be headed out to undermine their leadership. Now, I think that the main reason that he did this is that he wants to win a majority, and certainly a weakened Green Party, particularly when we're surging. It is politics. It is politics. But you know
what?
This
is politics. I mean, of course he wants to win a majority. Don't you?
Of course. Of course. But not at any cost. You know what, Evan?
He's the liberal. You're the Green.
You know what, Evan? Not at any cost. My answer to you is not at any price, not at any cost. Not if it's going to create a culture where good people are thrown out of politics. Not if it's going to create a culture where good, strong women, when we still have women severely underrepresented in Canadian politics, I am the only woman to lead a major federal party. Not at that cost. Right. If you're going to be an ally and a feminist, then it means showing up at the times when even your interests are at play.
Okay,
and Justin Trudeau has not done that.
I know this is delicate stuff, but like in the Westminster tradition, parties run against each other. There's no exceptions. You know, he's trying to win as a liberal. He's fighting for his views. He took one of your MPs. You're a Green. There's conservatives. There's an NDP. You know it. I'm just trying to understand. You're saying that he should play politics different because of your gender, or I'm just trying to understand. Like, what's
I'm
the
saying
parliamentary
that if
system
he,
if you take exceptions like that?
Evan, this system was set up by certain people to prefer certain people, and the idea that this is a level playing field where we all have the same shot is bunk. And he knows it. I know this because I set up the first institute in Canada to understand this phenomenon and to advance knowledge in it. So I tell you this as an expert in this field. So you can't set up all the rules. You can't create the playing field and then say, well, why aren't we all going to just play on this equally? If he knows that if he is going to walk the walk instead of just talking the talk, that he should not be doing this. And there is that question that we need to ask. Why have so many exceptional, strong women who have stepped up to serve and serve the public been pushed out of politics during his 6 years in office? That is a question that he should answer.
Well, Anna Marie Paul, I'm going to leave it there, but I will tell you, Jody Wilson-Raybould, mm-hmm. his former justice minister, is on our show later, and I will ask her that very question, which you're posing.
Please do.
First of all, I really appreciate you joining us. We will have Jody Wilson-Raybould on. I very much am hearing what you're saying, and I appreciate you taking the time always. I know these are difficult times in politics. Ms. Paul, I appreciate your transparency on all this. Thank you so much.
My great pleasure, Evan. Thanks as always.
All right, so that's Green Party leader Anna Marie Paul. And, man, she's coming right on to face that question, and we'll talk to Jody Wilson-Raybould in a minute. Now, in the meantime, of course, as a highly anticipated face-off took place today between U.S. President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin. They wrapped up an historic face-to-face meeting in Geneva, Switzerland. Obviously, the relationship between those two countries has been rocked by accusations of Russian interference in the last two U.S. federal elections, the annexation of Crimea, Putin's crackdown on opposition critics like Navalny. Check this out.
President Putin and I had share a unique responsibility to manage the relationship between two powerful and proud countries. A relationship that has to be stable and predictable. And we should be able to cooperate where it's in our mutual interest.
Indeed, we have varied assessments on a number of issues, but both sides expressed their intention to understand each other and to seek common ground. Talks were quite constructive.
So did the Biden-Putin summit manage to thaw out the frosty relationship? Richard Madden, CTV's Washington Bureau correspondent, joins us. Rich, always a pleasure, my friend. What was the big takeaway today?
Yeah, I think there's a couple takeaways here. First and foremost, let's just look at the optics. Both these leaders came in with low expectations that there would be any sort of breakthrough moment of this summit, which was supposed to be 4 to 5 hours, but was reduced to about 2 hours. Clearly, there was no major breakthrough, but I found interesting similarities in how both Putin and Biden described the tone of this summit. Both Joe Biden calling it good, positive, no threats, no ultimatums, not done in a hyperbolic atmosphere. Vladimir Putin also was cordial to Biden, calling him experienced. The meeting was efficient. So really, both leaders were trying to channel that this tone was cordial. It wasn't hostile. And that was interesting. The other one that I found was just the joint statement by Putin and Joe Biden. It's not very often you get a joint statement from the White House from both presidents of those respected countries. I'm just going to read with you one little line here saying, the United States and Russia have demonstrated that even in periods of tension, they're able to make progress on our shared goals of ensuring predictability in the strategic sphere. And of course, they're talking about nuclear arms control. So there was a bit of an incremental achievement there. Vladimir Putin announced that diplomats will be returned to Washington and Moscow, respectively. And then Joe Biden talked about that a task force is being set up to take a look at what's fair when it comes to cyber warfare. Critical infrastructure, Biden says, should be off limits. And he's talking about the energy sector and water system. So big incremental steps there, no breakthroughs. And to quote Bloomberg, I think they summed it up best. It was generally positive, but positively general.
Yeah. Big incremental and positively general.
Yeah.
Yes, welcome to the U.S.-Russia relationship where everything is some kind of riddle. All right, fascinating summit. Long road to go between Biden and Putin. Putin going nowhere. Richard Madden reporting live from Washington. Rich, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
You bet, Evan. Thanks.
All right, coming up, a COVID-19 crisis in Keshechewan, an alarming surge targeting that community, especially kids under the age of 12. How will the federal government take control? Did they come too late? Indigenous Services Minister Mark Miller joins us next. Stay with us. Welcome back to the program. A COVID-19 crisis is growing in one Ontario community. Keshechewan First Nation has 232 active coronavirus cases. Over half are in children under the age of 12. Indigenous Services Minister Mark Miller says nurses, paramedics and Canadian Rangers are in the First Nation and help may be on the ground. But what will the federal government do to tackle the bigger crisis of infrastructure and housing? Let's find out. Joining me now is the Indigenous Services Minister, Mark Miller. Minister, always a pleasure to have you on the program. You have described the situation in Keshechewan First Nation as alarming. Indigenous Services Canada says there are 15 nurses, 3 paramedics, 16 Red Cross members, and 15 Canadian Rangers on the site. Is there a plan to send even more resources to prevent the further spread of the virus in Keshechewan?
Absolutely, Evan. This is a situation that we're assessing on an hourly basis. We have just recently approved a request for assistance for additional armed forces support to help with general duties. About a dozen members of the military will be deploying shortly to help with the continued isolation and tracking activities, as well as helping the community through this difficult time. It is a community of just shy of about 2,000 people, and there's about 232 active cases. A large majority of them are youth, mostly among the unimmunized. So that is an alarming situation. And obviously, isolation protocols will differ with youth as well. Obviously, you can't separate from families as easily as you could with an adult. So we're there with the community. But, just to frame this, this represents about a quarter of the total active cases in Indigenous communities across Canada as of today. So a significant outbreak, but something that we have certainly seen in the past. The sort of upside to this is that we have a sort of a firewall with the large immunization of the adult population, particularly among second doses, which is so key with variants spreading across Canada. So there is a light at the end of the tunnel. It's just in communities that have large youth populations, this is a real warning signal.
Yeah, but Minister, the Chief says that this is a result of overcrowding. And he said that the federal funding for the community screening process, the screening at the airports, the isolation was working. And then he said the funding ended. And then he said, when you combine that with the overcrowding. They said, he said we'd ask for an isolation tent. They didn't get it. The funding dried up. That's why this community got the outbreak. Why did the funding dry up?
Well, I don't know that to be accurate. I'm actually looking into that fact. We have been doing constant testing from the very beginning. And in fact, Keshechewan has done great throughout the pandemic, despite the conditions that it has. And housing is obviously a big driver in this, as it has been in all communities. Keshechewan is one of those communities that has potential plans to relocate to what's called Site 5. But it does have a very precarious housing situation. And we have had to mobilize extraordinary resources to help communities. As we look through any spread of pandemic, we will be constantly revising what went right and what went wrong and looking at similarly situated communities to see why it worked there and why it didn't work in others. But this isn't a time to point fingers. It's a time to put out the fire, and it's been spreading.
But look, NDP MP Charlie Angus, who has been part of an emergency supply to get to Keshechewan, he said we've raised $110,000 because the government failed. He actually says it's important to be accountable on this. And he said we knew the situation in Keshechewan was bad, they knew overcrowding was bad, and that you didn't do anything about it, and you failed that community. What do you say to Charlie Angus?
Well, look, this is a battle to beat a global pandemic that's not going to be won on a partisan basis on Twitter. Clearly, we need to mobilize as quickly as possible, and we have put very significant funds into the community over the course of the pandemic, and we won't stop until COVID is wiped out and deployed a vaccination effort. But this is a whole-of-government approach, and we keep moving. And I don't know the facts that you advanced to be true, but certainly we always reassess what's going right and what's going wrong. And as a member of the government, I always want our teams to move faster than something that moves faster than government in a viral vector.
Right. I'm quoting the chief, who you know. So that's what he's saying. But one last thing. What's the plan? I know up to this point, Moderna has been shipped up to Northern Territories and many First Nations community. What about Pfizer? Because then you get the 12 to 17-year-olds who can get the shots because they're not eligible for any other vaccine right now.
Yeah, and Evan, across Canada, the vaccine of preference in northern and remote communities has been Moderna because it's ease of use, but it hasn't been advised for populations under 16. And so the Pfizer, with the relaxed logistical manipulation that we have seen in the last couple of weeks, as well as being able to extend to kids as young as 12, has been a real game changer. And we've been moving quickly to get that out as well.
So is Pfizer going up there?
Absolutely. And we have in northern communities generally. The Northwest Territories, for example, has enough doses to vaccinate all its members under 12.
No, I know, but when's the Pfizer getting to Keshechewan?
Oh, it's deployed, and we have been moving on immunizing those communities through Operation Orange as well as Remote Immunity.
Let me quickly go to something else, because the federal government's back in court fighting two rulings from the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal, one calling for the compensation for Indigenous children unnecessarily placed in care, as you know, the other over the expansion of the Jordan's principle, which says that First Nations children must get timely access to government resources without getting jurisdictional disputes getting in the way. The House of Commons voted in favor of an NDP motion that called for a status report within 10 days. Dropping the appeals and sitting down with residents of, for example, of St. Anne's Residential School. One, why are you guys still in court given that, and will that report be tabled?
Well, first and foremost, this was a non-binding motion presented by the NDP, and the government could not support a potential situation where, with respect to the St. Anne's documents, where the Supreme Court told us to destroy them, that we would be potentially in contempt of court. And it didn't encapsulate the two class actions that are also concurrent with respect to the same class of children that will potentially eventually pay them more money for the harm that the children suffered. So this is a complex legal situation that shouldn't be really argued on the House of Commons. It's why, out of truthfulness, we had to, as a government, abstain, allowing obviously our members to vote. But to go to the crux of it, there are ongoing discussions that we have to remain, out of respect for the parties, and will remain confidential, as well as the public arguments in court today. I'm not going to provide color comment on that. As a minister, I have to listen to those arguments that are being presented today, even the ones that I don't agree with, and keep an open mind. But this is a particular sensitive situation in the discussions, and out of respect, I will provide
You know, it's not just political. You know, activists like Cindy Blackstock and many chiefs from many communities have called for the government to, including, by the way, the Perry Bellegarde, the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, has called on the federal government to stop the legal fighting over those two things. But just because I only have a minute with you, Minister, I want to move over to searching the sites of residential institutions in the wake of what was the 215 remains in unmarked graves at the institution in Kamloops. I spoke yesterday to the Assembly of First Nations Ontario Regional Chief, Roseanne Archibald, and she told us that she thinks the federal government needs to put a lot more money on the table to help find these. I know the government's put $27 million. Here's what she said.
If Ontario alone is offering $10 million, then, you know, you look at that across the whole, all of Canada. How many residential schools were in each province? You know, you're looking at perhaps $100 million or more that's needed.
So will the federal government commit more money than has already been allocated?
Well, Evan, obviously we know that this could potentially cost much more. We're trying to get a sense of what that spectrum of cost is by looking at the demands that have come in, some that are public, and by soliciting others. There are some communities that don't want to proceed, some that do, and getting a sense of what that need is an active and ongoing discussion. Look, frankly, this isn't an area that this government has been accused of not spending on, and we will be there for the communities. But foremost in all this is what the Truth and Reconciliation Commission says to us, which is to allow those communities to lead the way in the process, and that's what we'll do. That's not a sign of equivocation. It's of deep commitment to this, and the funds will be there with the $27 million already earmarked, but there could very well be a need for more, and we're currently assessing it, and we'll continue to reassess it.
Okay. There could well be a need for more. I got to leave it there. Minister Miller, I appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks for having me on.
Before we head to break, some other news you need to know right now. This afternoon, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau left the Ottawa Hotel. Remember, he was quarantined there following his trip to the G7 Leaders Summit in the UK and the NATO meeting in Belgium. The Prime Minister was given the all clear to leave the hotel after testing negative for COVID-19. Prime Minister is now free to carry out the rest of his 14-day quarantine at home. Coming up, the Green Party is in disarray after facing down a vote that could trigger the removal of the party leader, Anna Paul, who just had a long interview with us. Can she come back? What do we make of the allegations against the Prime Minister and members of the Federal Council? We'll break it all down on Power Play next.
And even though I was given a strong mandate just over half a year ago, directly from our members, a small group of councillors sought to force a vote of non-confidence in my leadership. They did so with no substantive consultation with the members they represent. They produced a list of allegations that were so racist, so sexist, that they were immediately disavowed by both of our MPs as offensive and inflammatory and contrary to party ethics. And I thank our MPs for that.
Okay, so that is the Green Party leader, Anna Paul. Just before she was on our show, she survived a vote which would have triggered her, well, a vote about confidence in her, narrowly last night. Part of the Federal Council really clearly wants her gone. Part of her party wants her to resign. She refuses. She accused some members of the Federal Council, as you just saw, of a racist attack and a sexist attack against her. I read some of those very, very controversial allegations about her to her. She was quite furious about it. Her position remains precarious, though. She says she will not resign. The party had made her leadership contingent on a key stipulation that said that she has to hold a news conference and denounce one of her former senior advisors over his attacks on Green MPs about their position on the Israel-Palestinian issue. He had called them anti-Semitic, and they said if she doesn't do that, she will face a non-confidence motion. But she refused to do that. Now, does she have to stand up to the leadership on the Federal Council? She's already lost an MP, Jenica Atwin, to the Liberals. She accused Justin Trudeau of playing dirty politics and trying to force the first Black and first Jewish leader of a federal party out and trying to attack strong women. I know earlier in the program, we were supposed to have Jody Wilson-Raybould on, talk about a number of issues. She's unavailable now, but I will bring on the press gallery. We've got the Toronto Star's Queen's Park Bureau Chief, Robert Benzie, CTV News online producer, Rachel Aiello. And our special guest now is our former conservative minister, Lisa Raitt, who's now CIBC's vice chair of global investment banking. And she knows a thing or two about leadership as well. Okay, great to have everyone here. Lisa, this was pretty extraordinary. I don't think I've ever seen raw politics play out where you've got the federal council trying to force a leader to actually make a statement about denouncing someone or else face a non-confidence vote. She pushed back at them. She alleged that a lot of the criticism of her is based on race, religion, and gender. What did you make of Annamie Paul's response today?
She's reaching through that national council and reaching through the media directly to the Green voter who put her in as leader. And she's appealing to them. And she's saying, I'm trying to make change here. It's not pretty. It's not easy. This is what's going to happen. But I'm willing to see it through if you're with me. And I think what she's anticipating is that there'll be a groundswell of grassroots calling their councillors saying, what's going on? We like her. We voted for her. She won. So this was, it's not a Hail Mary, but it's as pretty close as you're going to get to it, and appeal directly to the voter.
Rachel Aiello, what did you make of this? Clearly, she's still in a very precarious spot, but she's in the fight, and she's taken on not only her own party, she's lost an MP to Justin Trudeau. She took some very tough shots at Justin Trudeau as well. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I think it is a tough spot to be in with this continuing to play out. And like you said, she's still got a ways to go before this is behind her. She hasn't done what the council has asked her to. So even though she has come out swinging, it's unclear whether it's going to be convincing enough to put this aside. Obviously, there's a lot of mudslinging going on within the party. The other aspect of this, Evan, that I'm still a bit puzzled by is the focus on Justin Trudeau and his part in this. Of course, they lost a Green MP to the Liberals. But for the most part, what we're seeing right now, Evan, the calls are coming from inside the House, from inside the Green Party. There is a lot of turmoil there that needs to be addressed. And even if she's able to get the floor crossing behind her, there are, you know, the prospects of an election around the corner. And if your internal party members don't have your back or are still actively undermining you, then you're going to have a bigger problem than just one MP defecting from your caucus.
Ben's weigh in on what you saw and Seeing a leader fighting for her political viability against her own party and against the Liberals.
Yeah, it was a very ugly sort of regicide that we're seeing in the Green Party, and it's almost like academic politics in the sense at university campuses, because the stakes are so low. Because at the end of the day, the Green Party is not going to win the next election. They'll be lucky if they get 3, 4, 5 seats, and that would be a big breakthrough for them. So because the stakes are so relatively low, this isn't a challenge to Justin Trudeau's leadership or Aaron O'Toole's leadership or Jagmeet Singh's leadership. This is a challenge to a leader who is really just a place where some progressives in this country want to park their vote for a little while. And I thought she was an inspired pick when she became the leader after Elizabeth May, because it was very much under May a one-person band, a one-person party. And I think that was a problem. And I thought, this is a good sign. They're expanding. She's well-known here in Toronto. She speaks both official languages well. I thought her statement was very strong, but her question and answers, the three questions that she took from reporters, did not pan out very well at all.
Yeah, it's true that they only got three seats, and their only seat in New Brunswick, by the way, is now a Liberal seat. But they do take up a big chunk of the vote that can split votes both ways and determine riding outcomes. But let me just go back to Lisa Raitt on that. Mm-hmm. She is not acknowledging that she played any role in the loss of a third of her caucus. I know it's one MP, but it's a significant MP, the first Green MP outside of BC. Jenica Atwin was on a question period with me and on this show. And she, in her press conference, she said this was about Annamie Paul. She blamed Annamie Paul, refuses to acknowledge that. Like, whatever Annamie Paul says, what happens when a third of your caucus walks out over to the Liberal Party? Doesn't that spell some trouble?
Perhaps. I think what I'd like to focus on more is the leadership that she showed today when she came out swinging, as was pointed out. And I thought she looked believable in her statement. I thought she looked authentic in her statement. And a lot of folks aren't going to necessarily understand the back and forth and want to get into the skirmishes that are happening inside the caucus. We had that happen with Maxime Bernier in the Conservative Party of Canada when I was a member of parliament. And it does cause ruffles. And, you know, Maxime went off to start his own party. And those things can be seen as internal, whether or not it's going to have a huge impact going forward for the Greens. Robert Benzie is right. A lot of people out east tend to look at the Green Party as a place to put their vote if they don't want to vote Conservative or NDP, given that they don't want to vote Liberal. It's an important party. And I would just say I understand fully why Anna May said what she said about Justin Trudeau. I think it makes an awful lot of sense, and I would not tie it to her current situation. What I would say is this. It's the gall that Justin Trudeau says, add women, change politics, that women need a voice in Ottawa. What she's reminding everybody is there's an asterisk at the end of that, add women, change politics, and it says, applies only if you're a Liberal woman. And she's just bringing that to light today, and I thought it was very important for her to say that, and it's resonating.
Yeah, Rachel, weigh in on that, because floor crossing is an old tradition. Some people don't like it. As you know, the NDP don't even take floor crossers because of the ethics of it. They prefer a by-election if someone is going to cross floor, and I appreciate that, but Annamie Paul suggests that somehow Justin Trudeau's value system and declaration of a feminist is undermined by the fact that he poached one of her MPs, who I should point out is also a woman. Is that the case? Is this a poison chalice for Trudeau? And is Annamie Paul being strategic here in playing that particular card in this?
Look, I don't think her comments about Trudeau are going to get her out of the internal mess, but I think Lisa's point is well taken in that if this is a message she's going to be going into the next election campaign on, Justin Trudeau has promised things he hasn't delivered, he's a fake feminist, as we've heard from other leaders, that could be a winning argument. That could be a thing to move forward with. It's an interesting place we're in right now, Evan, is bumping up against, you know, a part of this is just how politics works, and politics is ugly and it's dirty and it gets messy. But we are also hearing, and we've had this conversation on the Hill in the last few days, is that it doesn't always necessarily need to be that way. And there are ways that it can change to recognize that it's becoming more diverse, and she has points to be made. And we are now in a different place when it comes to having conversations about who should be in politics. So I'm curious to watch how that aspect of the conversation is going to unfold, and whether the argument she's making there, accusing, you know, him of being racist or going after her for who she is going to gain traction based on, you know, the Prime Minister's own track record, but also the shifting conversation we've had on the Hill and across the country in the last little while.
Yeah, Ben's weigh in on that. She's making some very powerful points when she says a woman of color may be held to a higher standard than someone else, that we've seen this before. She knows this personally. She says she's experiencing that now. And, for example, she says even the federal council of the Greens would have never done that to Elizabeth May. Why are they doing it to her? And she's not ruling out those factors. Those are fair comments, fair observations.
I think, yeah, I mean, you're looking at a triple whammy of misogyny, anti-Black racism, and anti-Semitism all in one go that she could blame for a lot of her challenges. And I think fairly, politics is not as sexist as it was when you and I started covering it, Evan, but it's still not as friendly a place to women as it should be, as I'm sure Lisa can attest. It's not what it could be in this country, and it needs to be better. The whole country needs to be better. And I think that when you see a Black female Jewish leader being run out of her own party, a party, by the way, that is largely white people. The Greens have the Green name, but it's been, it's been a white party, just like I guess other major political parties have been. It's not a good look. Having said that, I thought it was smart of her to blame Trudeau for this, because you're better to attack. You can't attack Elizabeth May and her husband, but you can attack Justin Trudeau for poaching. And again, I don't blame Trudeau for trying to poach MPs. He's in a minority situation. Paul Martin did it with Belinda Stronach, 15 years ago, and it saved him, saved his bacon for a little while.
Yeah. Okay. So, Lisa, let's put this in the broader picture. Last night we had some commentators saying the Green Party's melting down. Even if she survives this, her legitimacy, she's toast. Some people say, no, she can emerge from this. She can reassert her control, and she can actually make the Greens more viable. What's the future of the Green Party so close to a potential federal election? And what is this doing for Anna? I'll tell you one thing, Lisa. We're talking more about Anna Paul than we probably ever have.
Yeah, and I would say, look, she was authentic and believable, quite frankly, when she gave her statement. And if that connects on a campaign, that's going to connect on a campaign. I hate wild predictions, but I'm going to tell you, if she makes it out of this, she's going to be forced to be reckoned with on the national campaign, no question about it, because people are going to see leadership qualities in her that may be lacking in other parties.
Oh, you know what? You're right. We've all seen a thousand times in politics, people that emerge, Rachel, from a crisis. And as Lisa just points out, they emerge from a crisis. People think they write them off, and they're 10 times stronger. Jean Chrétien was yesterday's man until he was the tomorrow guy. But she's got a different issue, though, Rachel. She's running in a riding she's lost twice. She's running against a Liberal MP. If she doesn't win that riding, that's another micro battle. Not, it's a major battle. That could spell trouble. Does she have to pick another riding, Rachel?
It's possible. And look, I think it's one thing to come out of this strong and a serious contender, but you do have to be looking at policies and what you're going to put forward in the window. So if this opens that up where she's got more attention, that's the next thing people are going to be looking at from the Greens. In terms of where she's going to run, she seems pretty ardently stuck or determined to stay there. However, we'll see how the other chips fall with other Green MPs and possibly something else will open up. But that will be another time. If she doesn't win her seat, the Leadership Council is going to be right back on wanting to potentially replace her.
All right, Ben's finally, like, on the bigger picture. Do the Liberals, with all this controversy, is it a net benefit? I know it's a minority. I know they gain an MP. I know they get someone in New Brunswick. But they're dealing with their own issues now. They have an MP who's flip-flopped on her views on Israel, apartheid, now not apartheid. That's upset a lot of their MPs who are in ridings with predominantly Jewish populations, and it is not part of their policy. Is this a net gain or loss for the Liberals, and who else may benefit or not benefit from the crisis in the Greens?
Well, I mean, the Tories could actually benefit, because if the Liberals start ripping themselves apart over things like Israel, we know that the Conservative Party will benefit from that. And ridings around Toronto, for sure, perhaps around Montreal as well. So I think if I'm the Liberals, I'm a bit mindful that you careful what you wish for. You know what I mean, Evan? I think that it looked great. The headline was great. I love the story that my colleague Susan Delacorte wrote about Dominic LeBlanc wooing Jenica Atwin. But you know what? You gotta be careful, because sometimes these things can blow up, and it's not a good look for your party in the long run.
Okay, last word to you, Lisa. Who net benefits? I know you're saying that this could actually oddly turn out better for Anna Paul if she survives this, which, of course, no one knows what the outcome is going to be. Net benefits, net losses on this, Lisa?
So net benefit, I think, to Justin Trudeau, because he's one step closer to a majority, quite frankly, and a very nice story about Dominic LeBlanc turning on the charm, which he can do, and wooing across the Fredericton MP. The loss, I think, is for the Green Party infrastructure in general, and the question about how sound they are to their principles of diversity and inclusion, because their leader has really called them out on this one. So that's where I think the Green Party loses, and I think Justin Trudeau wins.
All right. Well, we'll see how this all plays out. Boy, folks, if you're watching Power Play every night, you rarely see raw politics play out so vividly. I know Lisa's probably thinking, my God, keep it behind closed doors. That's what parties like to do. This is the age of transparency in social media, and it played out in front of our very eyes. Robert Benzi, Lisa Raitt, Rachel Aiello, great to have you three of you play it out with us. Thank you for joining us. That's your Power Play Day in Politics. We'll see you in 23 short hours. Hug your loved ones.